Welcome to Minute Impossible. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to investigate with us the Mission Impossible franchise 1 minute at a time. I'm Jonathan, and I just changed up the way I said that. That was weird.
I'm Chris.
That's weird.
I'm Johnny.
And I'm Alan.
Oh, radio voice. Nice. Shouldn't you be talking in hushed tones, Alan?
Well, it depends. What channel am Mogadishu, I on?
Today in Mogadishu, there was a...
Is he doing NPR?
Well, yeah, if we do the NPR voice, we'll be like... Later this week, we're going to talk about what's going on in Iraq, but first, we have a small public service announcement.
That, I don't do that.
Oh. Or you could be like, well, welcome to Wacky Morning Radio.
Gross.
Yeah, that's gross.
I'd actually listen to that. I don't know.
We make fun of that old 80s style of like the Zoo Crew morning show. Like, hopping. Come on, yeah. Wake up, everybody. Let's get to work.
No, lots of shit, sound effects. Sucks. Like, honk, honk.
Auga. Auga.
Jesus. Well, Johnny from the Austin Powers Minute and Alan from the Wilder Ride are back with us again. It is hump day, and we're going to be talking about there's been a lot of death in there. We're going to talk about some poor gentleman that's been jammed into a suitcase. This minute begins with Ethan learning how Nick Hurwitz was lured onto the plane and ends with Swan Beck measuring how a big guy fits inside of a small suitcase.
Heyo.
Can I tell you, I know that's at the very end of the minute, but if you don't get any closer to Hannibal Lecter than that. Like,
He was actually licking his lips. He's looking at a picture. In this minute, he explains that they know that the pilot wasn't on the flight, but he was able to make the next flight because he was literally folded up and stuck into a duffel bag.
Right.
Which is pretty impressive. So the guy who murdered him from earlier, what's his name, Chris?
Stamper? Hugh?
We haven't Stamper? Hugh? Yeah, we haven't henched with him in a while, no. So I haven't thought about him. He hasn't been in the movie for 20 minutes.
No.
He is, so he not only murdered him, dismembered him, and then jammed his body in some weird way into a bag. Swanbeck has pictures of him, and he shows them to Ethan, and then he gets kind of, I mean, for lack of a better term, kind of turned on. He's like, big guy in a little bag. He's like, what?
Well, once we're not there yet, but once we get into the later minutes with Hugh and Ambrose, there's quite a bit of overt sexual tension between the two of them, and
there is,
and a lot of play into the idea of them being at one point lovers or something like that. I really don't know what they were going for there because it's obviously in the subplot that they cut out, but it's still kind of there, you know, very homoerotic in their ways together. And especially Stamper's Hugh's jealousy of Naya.
It is very,
very, very jealous.
That's of her. You're my boyfriend. I don't like this new girl. It's exactly. Very weird.
It is.
It's a very weird dynamic, yeah. Later on. But this dynamic's also weird because Swanbeck is making light of a guy dying.
Yeah.
Okay.
that's messed up because I mean none of the other
is. This is point number two of why I don't like Swanbeck. This scene, he's very flip about the death. I understand it's very matter of fact, but he's very flip. Kittredge was a jerk too in the last movie, so okay, I can. The flipness is actually kind of fun, but the way he's playing it, it's like he doesn't care about human lives.
No, collateral damage doesn't matter to him. It seems
he's like, yeah. He's like, why are you telling me this? Oh yeah, because the doctor's dead. Ha ha. And then, oh, by the way, he also stuffed this pilot into a duffel bag.
And all the people in the plane are dead, you know.
Oh, yeah, FYI, in case you were wondering. It's really flip, and I don't like it. And, is Robert Towne trying to make me not like Swanbeck in a way that's different than Kittredge? I didn't like Kittredge at first because I thought he was a hard ass, and I thought he was trying to kill Ethan, or maybe even was the mole. But later on, you're kind of with Kittredge again. You're on his side.
Well, I'm wondering if in those minutes that were cut out or some of those subplots, I don't know if it's anything in the script, that Swanbeck played a bigger part or that wanted you originally to think that he was going to be involved in this in some way. You know, the same way
maybe there's a scene that's cut where he had a puppy and it came into the room and he pet it and loved the puppy and then sent the puppy on its way? Is that what we're missing?
Something like that, yeah. Or where he told Ethan to kill this puppy, you know, to prove his loyalty.
I think we're talking the wrong movie there now.
Oh, that's right. That's Kingsman. Wrong spy movie.
I don't know. I mean, it feels weird. It's like I said, it draws too many allusions to Hannibal Lecter. He almost has like a sort of barely below the surface sort of, I don't know, just like a, he's sort of interested in how, wow, he kind of fit this big man in this small bag. I have to keep that in mind for the next one.
We barely have any time to even think about that because, guys, do you know your craniofacial compatibility score? Because we know the craniofacial compatibility score for Ethan and Ambrose, it's 3.42%. We get a really cool graphic of both of their faces, and they superimpose Ethan's face onto Ambrose to show, yes, he can do. By the way, that's a terrible, it's a terrible morph.
Yeah.
When he throws his face on him, like, that doesn't fit. That's going to be the screenshot for this minute, by the way.
And the ears are like completely different. Like, one ears are way up and one ears are way down. It's just, no.
That's going to be the picture I'm going to put up.
It really is like the face-off thing where Travolta's got a huge head and Nicolas Cage has this little tiny head. Just doesn't work.
I think about the like things you could do on the internet of like, if these two people made a baby, what would the baby
that's
look
exactly
like?
What it is. It feels
that's
like.
Exactly what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the software that my mom would use and be like, look at that. Look what happens when we put two cousins together. Well, that's not good.
don't do that.
No, let's not do that.
Oh, dear Lord.
Because that's what it makes me think of. It makes me think of Last Starfighter and the clone that they bring for the guy. That's exactly what it feels like behind the swingback.
Chris, for everyone that doesn't know, this is our first shot of the B-team.
Ah.
We'll probably never see him again because the B-team was a thing in the first movie.
Yeah.
The B-team was the team in the first movie that kind of was also at the embassy. And they kind of did all the grunt work. They're the ones that had to go after the A-team once they all went rogue and died and everything. So,
like B.A. Baracus and them?
So, it's another B-team member.
Yeah. No, the B.A. Baracus would be the A-team.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
He's this guy is in charge of photos of big guy in duffel bag.
Hey, doctor, I don't know why he talks like Rocky.
Oh my God, like Rocky. Not another podcast like this.
I can't do it. You've Johnny's been on so many podcasts with Liz Whitaker recently that she's, and Liz from Mean Girls Minute has been doing Rocky nonstop.
We did it for Rocky. We did it for Mean Girls.
She's exhausted. She's exhausted from doing the voice, so I apologize. I don't know where that came from. It just kind of came out of me.
You're fine.
I don't think he speaks at all. I think he's like one of those pod people.
Oh, when he does speak, he just goes. makes like a exactly, high pitched squeal.
Yep.
The next 3 minutes, 28, 29, and 30, Swanbeck spews some pretty awful dialogue. This is some bad writing. It starts here really badly, and then just gets worse every day, and he doubles down every day. So by Friday, we'll be at maximum garbage.
Maximum townage.
Yeah, it's bad. Maximum Robert Townage. He's, Ambrose is, his face twin. So you were talking about Joey early, Alan. It just reminds me of, Joey having a hand twin from that Vegas episode. Yes, yeah. I remember what episode it was.
I remember that one too.
Cue Friends music right now.
We've done the Friends clap before. That's how we used to sync the show.
Exactly.
I mean, obviously this whole week is just nothing but exposition. We're just getting dialogue and dialogue and dialogue. And I get it. Sometimes we need to dive into the story, but it just feels really heavy on exposition.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very slow. At this point in the movie before, we were already in the embassy, already on a mission, already doing like spy stuff. In this movie, we're being explained stuff before we go do it. And I think that's part of the tone problem. And I think that this movie was much more robust and had an extra movie attached to it and was, 3 hours and 45 minutes, there were probably action scenes and this didn't seem so cumbersome. Now, all that's left are these talking scenes. And there's a bunch of these. Later on, we're going to have Ambrose and the bad guy having in another room a long scene of exposition. about basically how they're going to make money on this. And it's like, oh my God, it's a spy movie. Think about Fallout. The only scene where they talk and have exposition, they're literally standing in front of a jet and they're about to go Halo jump.
Yeah.
So it's literally as they're walking, they're like talking and walking at the same time. Like, we have no time to talk. Gotta go jump out of a plane. In this movie, it's like, hey, we're in Seville. Let's all sit down. Got a couple torches. Let's talk. Ugh. It's brutal.
Yeah.
These are brutal minutes. That's why I'm glad two people are on it that have never been on the show before. So they can't blame me and yell at me for giving them these minutes.
I just felt like as I was watching them, I was like, is that a minute? Was that really a minute? That wasn't 5 minutes in 1 minute?
Yeah, it feels like we're doing 25 minutes this week.
What I noticed, Joe, just now as I was watching it on the loop here, Swaymaker reaches back to grab those photos from mysterious guy, faceless guy in the back. And there is a plate of fruit. Perfectly lit right there on the table behind him. There's like bananas and grapes.
You gotta have snacks.
It's those bananas. It's yes. Dimitri.
Dimitri brought those bananas back.
It's Australian bananas. I'd have those checked. Well, yeah. Actually, it's okay. It's in Spain.
They're Spanish bananas, but it's really, you know, Australia.
If it wasn't for how good Anthony Hopkins is at just delivering lines, I would have been checked out of this movie already. I do enjoy watching him deliver crappy lines in a way that only he can. I mean, he's doing great job with crappy dialogue.
Reading this on the page, I've read through this part of the script. It's basically the same. And when you read it on the page, you're like, God, this scene sucks. And when he says it, you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, okay. I mean, he's like moving his head around. He's kind of, I mean, all he has is literally five pieces of photo paper, a black suit in a room,
and his glasses,
one chair
apparently,
and one table. And he's walked over to the window. He's really using the space. He's definitely acting.
Yeah.
He's acting.
As only you know, Anthony Hopkins, Sir Anthony, can do.
Well, yeah, but you know, you say that, but I'm going to go one further. I think Tom Cruise is acting because we can tell. I think Anthony Hopkins is just such a natural. He's just doing his thing. It doesn't feel like he's doing a performance.
No.
He's almost Brando-ing his way through this. If I didn't know that Anthony Hopkins actually learns his lines, I would think he's just reading them off stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would think he's just making them up as he goes along.
He's just super casual. He's just,
it sounds so like just off the cuff. Like it doesn't sound rehearsed. It doesn't sound like he's, you know, run through this before. I mean,
and he's reading
really
the script.
A master.
That's the script. I read through it. I was like, I wonder if he embellished. He does not embellish. This is all written down. Like this scene, this awful, awkward thing where he's like, you know, a big guy, you know, fitting in this thing. It's in the script. So I was like, wow.
You can't even blame Anthony for that, you know?
No.
No, he's earning his paycheck with this role because it is not very well written. There's nothing really engaging that's happening here. And yet, I mean, I'm going to go opposite of what Johnny said. I don't know that it feels like 25 minutes. I realize only by diving in at the detail we're doing now, God, this sucks. If I'm just watching it, I'm not really paying attention. I'm like, God, this really just is good watching Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, this is when you get a drink.
I'll go to the bathroom.
Yeah, this is the bathroom break minute, or you just fast forward in on your DVD.
Because if you're in the theater, you go, what happened? Oh, you saw the beginning, right? Yeah, where the plane. Yeah. Okay, they just recapped all that. Oh, okay.
It's just Anthony Hopkins. Anthony Hopkins is in this?
When did he show up?
He's not doing anything.
Oh, he's gone already, but it's okay. You didn't miss anything.
It doesn't matter.
You know, and I know we didn't bring this up earlier. Does it bother anybody that it's lit this way? You're having this conversation with an agent. It's the only Mission Impossible movie where he's truly still on the force. Like, he's not been disavowed. He's not been on the outside. He's actually on a mission. And everything's in, like, shadows.
Yeah, it's more mysterious than, like, any of the other movies. Why they shot it, like, he's going to be shot in the back of his head the whole time is beyond me.
I think it's... I don't know why. Basically, I was trying to think if it was going to be style, but the rest of the movie is so bright.
Yeah.
There is some green stuff, like some Michael Bay-esque, like when they're in the lab and everything's it's a set. It's very well lit and it's got like green lights and blue lights and it's, you know, stark.
Yeah. It's lit from below and above.
Yeah. It's got some interesting camera angles and different lighting and that's very cool. But this, yeah, it's almost, I'm thinking they just shot this, or the second unit shot this, or although it is the main character, so maybe John Woo was there, but no, it just, it doesn't feel like it.
I think John Woo said, I need the meaty part here. I've got Anthony Hopkins. I've got the star. They're going to have 5 minutes of dialogue. I need to have some really cool mood lighting. I'm going to do the whole Blade Runner thing where I've got the key light and the rim light, and I'm going to have a little spark in their eyes. I'm going to have dark shadows, and I'm going to have contrasting light. I'm going to put a bright splash of what light in the background somewhere to highlight something. It almost feels like an art film in terms of the light design right here. It doesn't make any sense for the movie. It
feels like a stage
play. Like what they're doing. Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah,
exactly.
I mean, it feels like an interrogation, which it isn't, but it feels that way because of the way it's lit.
Do you think he spent too much money on the motorcycle budget and was just like, oh, we have three lights in like a day?
No, I think they spent too much money on Anthony Hopkins and they could only shoot him for a day or two. And so they had to make it as minimalistic as possible.
That's true. That could be also the reason. They were just like, just do four lights.
Because you know what it probably is it's probably the set from the end on the other side of that building, or that other side of that wall, where they just moved over and shot him the next day over there, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's, yeah. I agree.
Or they brighten it up and look, oh, it's that set now, you know?
Johnny.
Johnny.
I was going to say, did we lose her again?
No, I'm here. She's enthralled
at the analysis we're giving.
I'm listening to like all of the lighting conversations because I like when it gets to stuff like this where you kind of check out of what's actually going on in the minute and you're like really analyzing behind the scenes stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Well, it's very the one thing you can't say about any Mission Impossible movie is it's ugly. All of them are stylish in some way. De Palma is different than John Woo, and John Woo is different than
J.J.
Abrams and Brad Bird. They're all different, but they all do come up with such fun and interesting things that at least, I mean, when you're doing a movie minute by minute, you guys all know it's tedious and sometimes there's nothing to talk about, but these movies are art, full of art.
Oh yeah.
And I'm looking at a random second 56 and it's an awesome shot of Sir Anthony Hopkins and he's lit well and he looks healthy. Like, you know, the lighting like has him kind of brownish, you know, he's kind of like looks tan and you know,
he probably just come from shooting Zorro or something.
I've still got on my Zorro makeup. I hope you don't mind.
Yeah,
you know, I'm
also doing.
I guess what we got to learn from this is Tom Cruise had this whole idea that every installment would be a different director. Everyone would have maybe a different feel, so you got the sense of the director's stamp on it, and you do get that with John Woo here. I just don't like the direction they went, but. I mean, I can't argue with how it's lit. It's very cool. It's stylized. I don't know why, but it is really neat.
There is no reason. It's the same reason why later on when they're in that underground bunker and there's a scene with the doves and the lighting, you're like, there's no reason for this. Like other than John Woo's personal style in movies, there's no reason for why this looks like this. It's so different. This is one of those things. This is almost a hint of what's to come.
Yeah.
It's almost like you can't shoot interiors, basically, because when they shoot the interior of the lab and then when they shoot the interior of that that island thing, we'll come up with a name for it when we get there. They're all super setty, super, you know, super fixed, and the lights are all very stark and there's all darkness and light. And I'm sure he was trying to make like Chimera and Bellerophon, two things. You know, I'm sure in his mind it was artsy fartsy, but to the rest of us, exactly what you said, Alan, we're all like, why are we doing this? Why is it shot this way?
Yeah.
You're taking me out of the movie.
Totally. Yo.
All right, then let's turn the lights down, dim the lights, and head on over to the Tech of the App room. I like that now that there's a room. I'm glad we built that, Chris. It was something to do in the off season. I was really happy we did that during our hiatus.
It's a good thing.
All right, I'm going to push the elevator button and go on down. Ding, here we are.
Welcome. I took the slide down like in Batman.
That's the slide or the pole?
No, the slide like in Batman Forever.
Oh, I thought you meant the original 66. No. There was a like slide. I was like, oh man, there was a slide. Well, yeah. Didn't Alfred come down a slide?
No. Maybe in the original, but I know in Batman Returns, it's Keaton that comes down that slide.
Right. I thought Alfred did because he's fragile and old, but I don't remember. I can't remember that.
No, neither do I. It's been a while since I watched the old show.
I can't tell you anything about what you're talking about.
Thanks, Alan.
Sorry. You're
not the best color man for nothing. I'll go first since I make everyone else go first usually. In this, it's easy, guys. It's the face recognition matching software parameters. It shows midline reference points. It has their names. It has little points of articulation. It has two gears in the middle. I don't know. It's stupid. I love that they show Ethan's face being put onto Ambrose's head, and it doesn't fit. And they're just like, ah, it fits. Magic. So that's
got
my
the
take
long
of the
hair.
It's almost a laughable. Yeah, that was the one thing at the beginning of the movie. It's basically that he has Ethan's hair.
Yeah.
Because when he pulls off the mask, he doesn't take off like a wig. He's just taking off, at least from what I can remember, he's just taking off the mask.
No, it had the hair on it too.
Did it?
Yeah, it did.
Sure those weren't just Ethan's eyebrows?
No.
All right. You say so. I'll have to go back and look. How about you, Alan?
My tech of the ep is going to be, I'm going to dovetail off of the fact that we watched just the disembodied heads transpose faces. This entire minute is nothing but close-ups of heads lit just cinematically for this shot. So I'm going with the fact that every shot, everything is replicated from what we see on the laptop. We've got a close-up of Ethan's face. We've got a close-up of Anthony Hopkins' face. The only time we have a medium shot is when we have the figure in the background handing the pictures. Even the picture of the dude in the suitcase is a close-up shot. So everything mirrors what's on the laptop.
Oh, I like that. Chris?
I'm with you. I'm all about the voice. I mean, the face recognition and voice modification software, all of that to show us as an audience, this is why he's been chosen.
Also, they're setting this up, just so you know, Johnny, they're going to set this up and there's going to be masked fever in about 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many masks. Yeah. Cool.
Isn't this movie, Mission Impossible 2, have the most masks in terms of all of them?
Yeah, easily.
Easily.
Easily. It there's three scenes that I know of where at least two people have masks. In Fallout, there are a couple of masks, but not a ton. But there are a lot.
Yeah.
But not a ton. So
yeah, I think this has the most.
No, this one even has, I think, like masks, silver masks and stuff like that. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, they have double masks. We haven't gotten to that yet.
No, I don't think so.
This is the most masks. Most masks, most finger cutting offs. We actually have a mask. You didn't know, Chris. We have an actual mask drop, a music drop. I put in.
Oh, nice.
Every time there's a mask, we ratchet it up one.
Nice.
So, and Johnny, what about you?
The B team guy. I'm always gonna go for the obscure choice here, and okay. It's specifically because he took the time to painstakingly print out these photos. That was his job, to print out these photos on like a little bit thicker than normal paper, but not glossy like photo paper on
so
black
like
and white
finish.
Xerox printer.
And to not step into the light.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Nope. All right. So you're with B team and everybody else is going with lighting and facial recognition stuff. Okay. So yeah, it's a good episode.
Yep.
Let's move on to tomorrow, which will be minute 29, and maybe we'll learn a little bit more about what happened to Dimitri and what we're going to do about Ambrose and figure out what's going to happen next. Until tomorrow, thank you guys for coming, and we will talk to you tomorrow, okay?
All right. Sounds like a plan.
See you tomorrow.
Awesome. I've been Jonathan.
I've been Chris.
I've been
I'm Alan.
Oh, my God. At some point, one of you is going to accidentally do
it's
it.
It's fine.
Right.
Go ahead, Alan.
It's fine.
It'll be
it's
on
fine.
Friday.
Fine. We'll fix it in post. This minute will self-destruct.
See you next time on the show. It's done. It was so fun. Thanks for listening to Minute Impossible. Possible. Minute Impossible. Minute Impossible. Minute Impossible.